Tonight, AEW had a Pillars tag team main event with MJF and Sammy Guevara tagging up to take on Darby Allin and Jungle Boy, with the stipulation that if Darby and Jungle Boy were to win that main event tonight, the main event of Double or Nothing would turn from a singles match between MJF and Sammy into a four-way match. I was going to say tag team match. A four-way match for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. And of course, not a big spoiler here, we all know how this turned out. We are indeed getting a four-way at the pay-per-view for the AEW World Heavyweight Championship. Tonight it was all about, can they coexist? We had the can they coexist storyline in the main event. Could MJF and Sammy Guevara coexist together? Right? Best friends over the last few weeks. Could that last? What about Darby Allin and Jungle Boy? Right? They've been teasing issues between them underneath the surface. Could they coexist in that tag team match tonight? They would have to if they wanted to be in a four-way for the title at the Double or Nothing show. And so now MJF is going to have to defend the big Burberry belt on May 28th in Las Vegas, the one thing he did not want to do. It may have been the predictable outcome, but it was the correct outcome. Doing the fatal four-way is the right main event to book for Double or Nothing. They had some time to kill on the road to Double or Nothing, so they took a few detours, and we ended up with this storyline with MJF and Sammy paying him off and the two of them being bosom buddies. But in the end, we get to the place we were always going to get to. And now we are in a position where, for the first time on an AEW pay-per-view, we are going to have a main event that is contested with four of the young stars that really kicked things off when this company started. The so-called pillars, they love throwing that word around. It was MJF, it was Jungle Boy, it was Darby, it was Sammy, and now we're going to get them all in the ring together at the same time. It's going to be a great match. It's going to be a great main event coming up at Double or Nothing. On the whole, pretty standard fare as far as Dynamite. A pretty standard episode. There was a fun opener on this show. There was a good match involving Ricky Starks and Juice Robinson. Everything else I thought was just kind of there. We had dueling promos, dueling pre-tapes from Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega to really hype up their steel cage match. Next week is going to be a bigger week because there's a steel cage main event between Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley, which is a pay-per-view caliber match. But there was something else on the show tonight that was kind of out of the ordinary. And to be perfectly honest with you, it's the sort of thing that I wouldn't mind more of. This is not an image that you see every day, as we have old McDonald Jarrett strumming the guitar on the Briscoe family chicken farm. They paid the chicken farm a visit in Sandy Fork. There you see Mark Briscoe, Jay Lethal was there, Satnam Singh with a young child, baby Briscoe. Look at Satnam Singh. Boy, don't let Vince McMahon get a look at this guy. We'll have Uncle Elmer Part 2 if he ever comes to WWE. I actually found that very entertaining. If anything, I'm sorry we didn't get more of this on the show tonight. But this is your AEW Dynamite review for May 3rd, 2023. My name is the Solomonster, and I thank you for joining me here on a Wednesday night. This is what we do on Wednesdays. We talk about AEW. We have a lot to dive into, including some news here at the top that we'll be getting to. Do me a favor, I don't ask much of you, but like, subscribe. If we get 450 likes is the goal tonight that I set for Be the Booker. If we hit that goal, we will do that later on in the stream. Super chats are open, so go ahead and get them on in if you have comments and questions about the show tonight or anything else for that matter. We got Backlash coming up this weekend. Go ahead and drop a super chat. I do appreciate all of the support. Channel memberships are open as well. You can join our Green World Order if you so wish. But we also, I just want to make mention here, have a brand new episode of Sound Off Gamer. It just went up a few hours ago. It is up right now exclusively for channel members. You guys get early access to it before everybody else. My luck may be turning. I don't want to jinx it, but my luck may possibly be turning. I got my fingers crossed. I'm hoping. So again, that went up a little bit before the show tonight. Go ahead and check that out tomorrow. Over 90 minutes, by the way. That is the longest gamer I have ever done. Before we get into everything here, I do want to send a word of congratulations to somebody actually from the podcasting community. The news was made official earlier this evening. A hearty congratulations there to Will Washington, who hosted the Grapsody podcast on Fightful and did news for them as well. He just left Fightful for a new endeavor, and now we know what that new endeavor is. Will Washington is All Elite. Tony Khan tweeted earlier this evening, he's the new AEW Wrestling Administration Coordinator, working in many areas of wrestling, live events, social media, creative, and PR. Yeah, I know a guy who does PR. He has a great wrestling mind, Tony Khan says. He's here backstage tonight at Dynamite Live on TBS, and it is official. Will Washington is All Elite. Fightful reported that Washington is going to be helping with overseeing continuity and aiding in long-term creative in AEW, working directly under Tony Khan. And that is a good thing, because with Collision coming very soon, even though the official announcement has not yet been made, they have that new two-hour Saturday show that's coming in June, which is only going to add to the workload for Tony Khan. Tony is going to need help on the creative end now more than ever. So any help that he can get, especially if it is help as far as long-term, those are the words that I noticed, not just creative, but long-term creative. And Will, I've never met Will, but Will seems like a smart guy. I think that can be nothing but a positive for Tony Khan and for AEW. So I think that is a quality hire, and according to Fightful, his deal with the company was made official on April 27th, and obviously he has officially started. So again, congratulations to Will Washington. Now, before we get into Dynamite, I said I had some other news as well, and really, it was the top AEW news of the week concerning Wembley Stadium. As all of you know by now, AEW has a very big show. What will that arguably end up being the biggest show in AEW history. Quite literally will end up being the biggest show in AEW history. On Sunday, August 27th, they are doing the first ever AEW All In. And of course, All In happened many years ago. That was an independent wrestling event. Ring of Honor, I believe, owned the name. And so now that Tony owns Ring of Honor, he owns All In. So we're getting the first All In. But Tony Khan, for his first event in the UK, he was not holding back. He was going for broke. And he booked Wembley Stadium, which is a gigantic stadium that fits over 90,000 people. So it's like, go big or go home. Tony Khan decided to go big. And when we talked about this about a month ago, when the announcement was initially made, you know, there were a lot of people throwing around predictions, and there were a lot of people, you know, other people were mocking AEW. What are they thinking? Tony's out of his mind. They're never going to fill the building. Well, yesterday was day number one of the All-In presale. People who had pre-registered got a presale code, and they can buy tickets starting yesterday. Tickets don't go on sale until Friday for the general public. So we are now 2 days into this presale, and on the very first day of pre-sale tickets, they sold 36,000 tickets for All In at Wembley Stadium, which already shatters the company's all-time attendance record that they set a couple of years ago at Arthur Ashe Stadium for Grand Slam here in New York. That was about 20,000. So they nearly doubled in one day their all-time attendance. And this is the pre-sale for this show. There were a lot of drones who were having a very difficult time coping over the last 36 hours or so. I would be lying if I told you that I wasn't very much amused by a lot of the coping that has been going on and some of the excuses that I have seen. You know, Tony Khan posted that tweet thanking the fans and throwing up some numbers, and Meltzer posted some numbers. And my God, you look at some of these replies and it was very entertaining. You had excuses that range from Tony Khan bought all the tickets himself. He bought all 36,000 plus tickets, right? I saw some of that. I saw that it was all scalpers, right? Oh, it's all scalpers who bought up the tickets, which evidently is actually very much not true, based on the current numbers on the on the on the market right now. But also, you know, there were people saying, oh, Meltzer is just making up numbers. It's not true. We haven't heard it officially from Ticketmaster. I mean, my God, the excuses that I have been reading over the last 36 hours, I have been enjoying the meltdown, I will just tell you. But there was something else that happened that I also found very amusing. And for those of you, by the way, who are sending super chats, they will pop up when I'm done talking here in a second. But I want to get through this first. There was a tweet that set off Tony Khan. And it was a tweet from Mike Coppinger, who works for ESPN as a boxing insider. I would question what kind of inside knowledge this man has about anything based on this tweet that he posted. He tweeted that he was hearing that Wembley is scaled for only 40,000 for AEW. Far cry from last April when I was ringside for Tyson Fury and Dillian White, and it was packed to the brim with 94,000 people. He says, nothing beats the big fight feel at Wembley. Now, Tony Khan was very upset about this. He saw this and he responded. He said, lies. He said, what a load of crap. Tell your agent, Nick Khan, to shove it up his ass. Tony, I told you. Tony was mad. He was very upset about this. But he wasn't done either. He was not finished with this man. He tweeted again. He said, since you carry the credentials of a credible reporter and represent the worldwide leader, I'm just curious, who is your source for this, and how can a reporter representing ESPN tweet something about a legitimate news story that is so blatantly wrong and easily verified as a falsehood? Which is a valid question. Now, first of all, he's not going to reveal his source, but it's a valid question. You know, I mean, unless he had some sort of inside knowledge and he didn't indicate, I mean, he said he was hearing. I mean, I hear things too. I mean, there are people who hear things. They hear voices in their head. I don't know who he was hearing this from. But it was pretty clear that this stadium was not ever going to be scaled for 40,000 for AEW, especially going back a few weeks when they saw the initial interest in getting those presale codes. Seemed pretty clear they were going to do at least that much as far as the initial on sale. And by the time we got to August, it would be a lot more than 40,000. So I'm with Tony in that I don't know where this guy got his information from, but he came across very dumb with what he tweeted. Of course, if I were Tony, what I would do, or what I would have done, I would, you know, kill him with kindness. I would extend a ticket to Mr. Coppinger and say, hey, since you were at Wembley Stadium for the big fight last year and you said nothing like a big fight feel, right? Come on down to All In. We'd love to have you. We'll have a seat waiting for you. Maybe it'll be the seat that Hulk Hogan claimed he left for that sick child back in 1992 when he was at Wembley Stadium and he looked out into the crowd and saw that the seat was empty and he knew that Hulkamaniac had passed away, even though Hogan was not at SummerSlam in 1992. He can give him that seat. See if Mr. Coppinger will take him up on his offer, if Nick Khan allows it. He has to ask permission first. On Wednesday, it was a happier tweet from Tony Khan today because we had an update. He said, thanks to our great fans, only 32 hours into the presale for All In London, we've already sold over 43,000 tickets for over 4.5 million pounds, $5.7 million. Before the general on sale has even begun, with more great seats going on sale soon. So in the span of 24 hours, I mean, he says 32, but basically in the span of about 24 hours, they went from 36,000 seats at $4.7 million at the gate to 43,000 seats and over $5.7 million. And they still have the general on sale on Friday. We got one more day of pre-sale, and then the tickets go on sale for everybody this coming Friday. I initially said when everybody was throwing out predictions about what they thought the show was going to do, and this is going back about 4 weeks, my prediction was that 50,000 was not as outlandish as some people were making it out to be. There were people saying, oh, there's no way. There's no way. AEW has done 20,000 at the most. There's no way they will get that many people in Wembley Stadium. And I said, I wouldn't be so sure about that. I said 50,000 is not as outlandish as some people are making it out to be. And then I revised my estimate about a week later. And I said, I think this, I could see this show doing in the range of 60,000. I think was a very realistic outcome for AEW. And seeing what they've done so far here, I think that they could do 70,000 to 75,000. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all. And there are people who think the event is going to sell out and do 90,000. I don't think it's going to sell out. I don't see AEW getting 90,000 people in Wembley Stadium for this event. They don't have to. It's okay if they don't get 90,000 people or 85,000 people in Wembley Stadium for this show. What they have already done so far, this has already been a massive success. Because when that day comes, or wherever and however the show is going to air, you're going to look out, you're going to see a sea of people from the UK, from all parts of Europe, from the US and Canada. They're going to have fans flying in for this the way that they do for WrestleMania. This is going to be a destination event for wrestling fans in the way that WrestleMania is for people every single year. Because it's the first time that they're doing something like this. It's the first time they're doing a stadium show. And it's the first time they're going to the UK. And you know how rabid that UK wrestling market can be. So this is going to be one of those special occasions that people are going to want to be there for the very first one. I still don't think it's going to sell out. And it's funny, too, because when I say that to some people on Twitter, there are still people who get offended. I don't know if it's just the overly sensitive AEW fans or UK fans who think I'm sliding them in some way by saying you guys can't sell it out. I just don't think that's going to happen. I would happily be wrong, but I don't see that happening. But it's not as if anything less than a sellout is going to be a sign of failure. What they have already done is unbelievable. It doesn't matter how many tickets they end up selling. You know, what they have accomplished is very impressive, and they've already shattered their own records. This is going to be the biggest event in AEW history, and that is without a single match being announced. CM Punk is not even officially back yet. We don't know a single name. We don't know a single match that is going to be taking place on that show. And before tickets go on sale to the public, they have moved almost 45,000 tickets. That is nothing but a success, and they should be very happy and very proud of that, and I'm sure they are. As of this moment, it does not look like this show is going to be airing on pay-per-view because they already have a pay-per-view scheduled a week later. They are doing All Out, likely in Chicago. I saw that Mega, their chief legal counsel, did a podcast about a week ago, and she kind of let it slip that they're doing a pay-per-view back in the U.S. a week later. And it's hard to imagine that. I mean, that's a tough ask. That's a lot to ask of your fan base to do pay-per-views on back-to-back weekends like that. So it's going to air somewhere, and it may well be on a streaming service like Max that's launching later this month. And, you know, it's Warner Brothers Discovery, HBO Max, and Discovery Plus. They're merging them into one service. Maybe it'll be streamed on Max. It's hard for me to imagine a big show, 3 hours, 4 hours like this airing with commercials on television. That would be terrible. That would be awful if they aired this show on fucking TNT with the picture-in-picture every 5 minutes. So that's my guess, though, as far as possibly maybe it'll be on a streaming service. I'm just not so sure they're going to put this on pay-per-view. But that is the current update on All In. Once tickets go on sale on Friday, we'll do the podcast this week, and I'll have a more current update on how many tickets have moved. See if people's predictions, if their predictions are accurate or not. But this has been a very big week already for AEW, and they should be very happy about that. But Dynamite tonight opened with an 8-man tag team match. Orange Cassidy, Bandido, Adam Cole, and Roderick Strong making his in-ring AEW debut. You guys are an active bunch tonight. Holy shit. Tuxedo T. Servo, the clown is in town. Thank you for the Bully the Clown super chat. We're going to have a lot of messages to get through a little bit later on. I didn't say Mr. Dango. I said Dangor. Louis Dangor, give me sport. He was the one who said that he wasn't going to be covering the WWE discrimination lawsuit. Didn't want to touch it. Give Me Sport has a little relationship with WWE. We don't want to ruffle any feathers over there, so we avoid anything overly controversial. I have a whole video up on that lawsuit, by the way, in detail, if you want to hear about the lawsuit, as many people did. It's up on the YouTube channel right now. So Roddy, making his in-ring AEW debut tonight as part of this eight-man tag against Parker and Menard, Daniel Garcia, and Jake Hager, representing the Jericho Appreciation Society. Chris Jericho came out with them to do commentary, and he was wearing the new Britt Baker shirt with the picture of her and the black eye on the shirt. You know, at least in Jericho's case, him coming out wearing that t-shirt does make sense because he's wearing it to troll her boyfriend. He's trying to get under the skin of Adam Cole, which was working because Adam Cole was seething. He was looking back down the ramp at Jericho. He wanted to get at him in the worst way. He was so angry. But here's the thing I don't understand, though. I was thinking about this. And it was even, I think, in kayfabe. I'm not sure why Adam Cole is so upset. If he was upset about the t-shirt, I'm not so sure why he's so upset about the t-shirt. Because Britt Baker herself went on Twitter and said, with this whole controversy, people saying, oh my God, how can you make a shirt like that? And she went on Twitter and said, well, you know, Saraya and Tony Storm and Ruby Soho, they made the shirt. I may as well make some money off of it if they're going to troll me with a shirt about me. And so that was sort of her justification for putting that shirt on the AEW shop site. So she endorsed it. So I'm not really so sure what Adam Cole is so upset about. So Cole walked up the ramp. He was trying to go after Jericho. Parker and Menard, they cut him off. In the ring, Bandido held Parker up for the delayed vertical suplex. He got the crowd to count along with him. He counted all the way up to 9 until Menard broke it up. Bandido then tried the same thing to Menard. Then Parker stopped it. They tried for a double suplex. Bandido reversed it, and he suplexed both of them heading into the first picture-in-picture break on this show. Always fun to watch Bandido do those spots. And it's easy to get the crowd into it because, you know, visually it just looks, it's a cool-looking spot. And as he's holding the guy in midair like that to get the crowd to chant up to 10, Bandido is great. So the JAS, they had Orange Cassidy in a bad way. He hit a Stun Dog Millionaire to Matt Menard, got the hot tag to Roddy, who went on a tear, and his offense looked crisp, it looked solid, and it looked brutal. I thought he looked great here. He throws those chops, man. They rival Walter. And it's a shame we only got one match between them on a random NXT at the beginning of last year. That is a program I would have loved to have seen. So he hit the angle slam on Jake Hager, connected for a 2 count. He tagged Cassidy back in, who got locked in a Daniel Garcia sharpshooter. And at that point, the match broke down. It was all action at this point. Garcia kicked out a beach break by Orange Cassidy. Cassidy and Bandido then hit stereo dives out onto Garcia and Hager on the floor. Roddy nailed Parker with a leaping knee strike, and Adam Cole, who made a blind tag, he lowered the boom with that knee strike right to the back of the head and picked up the win for his team. And as soon as the match was over, Adam Cole did not waste any time. He was not waiting for the match announcements or anything like that. He exited the ring. He sprinted up the ramp towards Chris Jericho, towards the announce desk. And Jericho is standing at this point. Right, and he's standing, and he's got the headset on, and he's very clearly looking in the monitor. Now, unless this is like the original Scream movie, where Gail Weathers planted the camera in the house, right, to see what was going on at the house party, and then she goes back to the news truck, and the news guy with her is like, ah, shit, there's a 30-second delay. Unless there was a 30-second delay on this monitor, it was very silly, the fact that Jericho was standing there, and he could clearly see that Adam Cole is charging towards him, up the ramp, and he just no-sells it and pretends like he has no idea until Adam Cole finally arrives, and Adam tackled him through the set that's behind the announcers, and he knocked it over, and he's pounding away on Jericho until security finally arrives, and they break the two of them up. So I thought that this was a fun opener. I enjoyed this, and aside from it being, like I said, silly that Jericho didn't realize that Adam Cole, even though he was looking right in the monitor, didn't see that he was coming right after him, I liked him tackling Jericho through the set and the set kind of collapsing a little bit around them. I thought that was a cool visual. He had good intensity here, as he should, you know, given what happened to him and his girlfriend a few weeks ago. You know, adding Britt Baker has now added a personal element to this, as overdramatic as I felt that angle and her calling out Austin was a few weeks ago. It adds a personal element to it and gives Cole a reason to be really, you know, not just offended, but just pissed off to the point where he wants to murder this man. This is not just a wrestling match. It is not just a wrestling angle. Jericho went and did something to make it personal. So it kind of fans the flames a little bit more that way. And it's a little bit different in that respect from feuds that Jericho has had before. It differentiates this one a little bit from the past ones. After the break in the back, we saw security escorting Adam Cole out of the building, who wanted to get at Jericho. Jericho is yelling, yeah, get him out of here, get him out of here. And so they take Cole out of the building. Britt Baker shows up. She starts yelling at Jericho, and she slaps him, and Jericho takes a bump to the ground in doing so, and she then called him Bitch Jericho. See, now that's something that you can put on a t-shirt. We'll see if Bitch Jericho catches on. The Blackpool Combat Club, they were in a stairwell in the back. Hey, Silver Tower just gifted 5 channel memberships to some fine folks here on this channel. Silver Tower, thank you very much. And you 5 folks now have access to Sound of Gamers. So I know what you guys are going to be doing when we're done here. Can go check out episode 5. So the Blackpool Combat Club, like I said, in a stairwell in the back, Brian Danielson is cutting a promo that we could not hear because in the initial 5 or 10 seconds here, the audio was turned almost all the way down. So we could not hear what Danielson was saying. It is inexcusable to me that after all these years, this company still every single week has audio issues on this show. I don't understand it. They have a great production team there, but it's always the audio issues. And I don't know why. I don't get it. So Danielson said that he recalled a certain legend in the business, saying that he was the best there is, the best there was, and the best that there ever will be. He said he found that very arrogant, that said legend thought that nobody would ever be better than him. Well, he said it because it's true. Danielson said that he's better, and he's the best wrestler in the world today, and if not, that it's one of his fellow stablemates. And he pointed at Wheeler Yuta, and he said that he hopes this little shit, which is what he calls Yuta, he hopes that this little shit ends up being better than him someday. Good day, mate. How you doing, mate? Good day. So, he said the Blackpool Combat Club is all about bringing out the best professional wrestlers possible, unlike the Elite. And then John Moxley said that they are just blades, searching for pieces of iron to sharpen each other. And then he focused on his steel cage match coming up next Wednesday with Kenny Omega, and said that their previous matches in 2019 and 2020 may as well have been a decade ago. It was like a lifetime ago. Because this is a new Jon Moxley. This is a new version of himself. And he vowed to leave one hell of a mark on Omega next week. And indeed, that cage match is going to be taking place on Dynamite next week. And that is a pay-per-view caliber match that they are giving us next week. One observation. Brian Danielson has been the de facto leader of this faction ever since he came back. He's the one who goes out there and cuts promos on behalf of the entire group. But I've noticed that he has yet to get physical in any way, shape, or form, or take bumps from anybody since the Iron Man match with MJF at Revolution. So it's been 2 months, and he really has not gotten physical over these last several weeks. We've seen all the other members of the Blackpool Combat Club brawling with the Elite and getting physical and taking bumps and doing moves, but not Brian Danielson. So I don't know if it's a case where he's not medically cleared, if he suffered some kind of concussion or injury in that match at the pay-per-view. I'm not sure. But it's something that as these weeks have gone on, has become more noticeable. That Danielson is the mouthpiece, but he really isn't doing anything physical. We had Saraya one-on-one with Willow Nightingale. And Saraya rolled out to the floor to start out the match. Willow followed her. Saraya, though, ducked behind Ruby Soho and Toni Storm. And Saraya got back in the ring first. She attacked Willow. A little while later, Saraya distracted the referee, Paul Turner, while Ruby and Toni put the boots to Willow, which took us into the picture-in-picture commercial. Willow battled back with a spinebuster and a DVD, but Toni Storm took the referee, so the ref now once again distracted. Ruby got into the ring and she got pounced right into the ropes. She took a stiff pounce, did this woman. Toni Storm then ate a shot of her own. Saraya hit Willow with the fisherman's buster that she calls Good Night. It's a night with a K. Play off her name, get it? Good Night. And she pinned Willow to win the match. After the match was over, the Outcasts were beating down Nightingale in the ring when we heard the theme music of a former AEW Women's World Champion. And it was the return of Hikaru Shida. Came down to the ring and she had her trusty kendo stick with her. Shida gets into the ring. She kind of hesitates at first. There's a bit of a standoff with her and the Outcasts. And then she smirks. She smirks and she embraces the Outcasts. Everybody boos. It looks like Hikaru Shida has turned heel. She has aligned with Saraya and Toni Storm and Ruby Soho. And they handed Shida a can of green spray paint. And they're holding Willow, waiting for Shida to spray her in the face. When all of a sudden, and unbeknownst to the heels, who sneaks into the ring behind them but Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter? They don't realize it at first, but then they turn around and they see Hayter and Baker, and then Shida, we realize at this point what's going on. This is all a ruse. This is the Shida swerve. I have dubbed thee the Shida swerve. Shida was in on it all along with Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Now the numbers have been evened 3-on-3. When they turned around, or when Saraya, I should say, turned around, she got spray painted in the face by Shida. And Shida started wailing away on the Outcast with her kendo stick. So the numbers game once again helping the Outcasts to win their match. This is a story that's been playing out every week since these three got together. The constant referee distractions, the interference. That's how they've been winning their matches. But they got their comeuppance. The heels got their comeuppance at the end of this match. They thought they had it in the bag. Shida turned one back around on them, made them look like fools for a change. And look, this whole angle started with Saraya and Toni Storm throwing shade at Shida. So it really wouldn't have made sense for Shida to join with them. It makes far more sense because she's one of the AEW originals, like Britt Baker and like Jamie Hayter. Now there's three. Now it's all even. 3-on-3, and I'm sure that'll be the match at Double or Nothing. We got a pre-taped House of Black vignette. Malachi Black, Brody King, Buddy Matthews with Julia Hart. The three men toss their trios titles down on the ground, which I think in a way is kind of a metaphor for how these championships are viewed by many people at this point. Threw them down on the floor. Malachi said the titles are a reminder that, actually I think he said they were tainted at first, like tainted meat. And he said that these titles are a reminder that some in this company get away with murder while others are punished for following the rules. And they introduced what they are now calling the open house. Any three competitors can team up for a title shot, but under house rules. And house rules are as follows. 20-second counts are enforced on the outside, just like they are in New Japan. So you get 20-second counts outside the ring. No rope breaks. And disqualifications will not be enforced. Julia Hart then welcomed us all to the open house. So that's a fancy way of saying that we're having another open challenge for another set of championships here in wrestling. This is not just an epidemic in AEW, this is an epidemic in WWE as well. Where when you have a set of titles or a title and you don't know what to do, or you're too lazy to book out a very specific feud, a very specific program. Well, we'll just do an open challenge. And there's way too much of a run. And look, I like a good open challenge every now and then as much as the next person, but there is way too much of a reliance on the open challenge gimmick in wrestling. So we are getting an open challenge. Now, that's the negative of it. It is a creative way, though. It is a creative way to differentiate the trios matches from the traditional tag team matches and the traditional tag team championship matches. So if that's their goal, or if it's just incidental, I don't know. But it does at least make it a little bit different than the other tag team matches that we get here in AEW. Although I am wondering, though, you know, with DQs not being enforced, I mean, how is that any different than any other tag team match in AEW? AEW doesn't enforce disqualifications. We had one a few weeks ago in the angle that they did with Jungle Boy. Or was that a countout? That wasn't even a disqualification. That was a countout. We rarely get disqualifications in this company. So that was my question coming out of this segment. When do they ever enforce DQs in this company? How is that some sort of unique stipulation? This company doesn't like doing DQs at all. Up next, we had a Trios Battle Royal. We had the Lucha Brothers and El Hijo del Vikingo, the reigning AAA Mega Champion, out together as a trio. They got an entrance. Also included in this Battle Royal, Josh Woods, Tony Nese, and Aria Daivari. Is he still Ari? Maybe he's Ari. I don't care. Evil Uno, John Silver, and Alex Reynolds representing the Dark Order. The Butcher, The Blade, and Kip Sabian. QT Marshall, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Aaron Solo. And Max Caster, Anthony Bowens, and Billy Gunn representing the Acclaimed. The Acclaimed also got their own entrance, and Caster rapped to the ring, although he was a little out of sync with the music. This was your standard television battle royal. Nothing terribly exciting here. Marshall and Solo, they got dumped. Hobbs eliminated both Lucha Bros, so they at least gave him that spot in this match. And then, when Vikingo came after him, he caught Vikingo, he pressed him over his head, and he dumped Vikingo out onto his partners on the floor. So they at least tried to give Powerhouse Hobbs something in this match, even though they did him dirty with that TNT title run. So Hobbs was posing a little too much. He ended up getting eliminated by the Acclaimed. While the Acclaimed were celebrating, Caster got eliminated by the Butcher, and then it came down to 3-on-2 until Anthony Bowens launched the Blade to the floor to even the sides. Bowens ran wild until he got thrown over the top rope. Held on, though, by one hand. And we got stereo famousers by Billy Gunn and Anthony Bowens, which led to a double elimination of the Butcher and Kip Sabian to win the Battle Royal for the Acclaimed and Daddy Ass here on the show. I don't know what the point of this battle royal was. There was no mention of it being for anything. I'm really not sure what the purpose of this battle royal is. Now, the fact that they aired this immediately after that House of Black vignette would kind of be a tease that the winner of the battle royal is potentially going to be next in line to challenge the House of Black for the trios titles. And if that's the case, only issue I have with that is the fact that the House of Black just announced this new open challenge. So then what would be the purpose of having to win a battle royal? Now, again, they never specifically said this was a number one contenders match, but that's my whole point here. What was the point of this? I guess this was just their way, I suppose, of establishing the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn as a trio. But do we really need an entire battle royal for that? Seems kind of unnecessary. Backstage, Sammy Guevara was being interviewed by Renee Paquette. And MJF showed up, tried to buddy up to Sammy. Sammy said that, you know, I watched the show back last week when you and I were leaving the building, and you told me that there was no room in the back seat, and you left without me, but there was nobody in the back seat. There was plenty of room back there. And MJF started fake crying, and he claimed, well, you know, I suffer from chronic back pain from carrying this company over the past year, which I thought was a great line. and I needed to lay down. But he didn't want Sammy to think he's a wimp, so that's why he didn't tell him. MJF said that Sammy deserves better, and he doesn't blame him for not wanting to be his friend anymore. And he started to go ahead and leave. Sammy grabbed him, and he kissed him on the forehead. And he said that I should have never doubted Max. And they both hugged, heading into the Pillars tag team match later in the show. Now, as I watched this, I thought, okay, obviously they both have to realize that he, the other guy is full of shit. I mean, you could tell that MJF is just putting on a performance here because he wants Sammy to lay down for him at the pay-per-view. That's been well established. But I certainly hope that Sammy Guevara is not booked to look like a dumb shithead when he, in the end, like, oh, I didn't realize. And I thought that we were going to get that kind of eureka moment later in the show where, or late in the match that we got in the main event where Sammy would reveal, like, yeah, MJF would try to go to do something and he would kind of catch him and be like, yeah, I knew you were full of shit all along. He never did that. So I guess Sammy Guevara really is a moron who trusted MJF because we never really did get that one moment. So Jon Moxley, he got promo time earlier on the stairwell to talk about his cage match next week with Kenny Omega. So now it was only appropriate that Kenny Omega would have his turn. And he was in the back with Don Callis. Callis pointed to the scar on his head from, in storyline, the Blackpool Combat Club gave it to him. In reality, he's just a klutz. And he fell, and he hit his head on a light pole and suffered a very bad gash. He will now have a permanent scar on his head. Every time he wakes up in the morning and he goes to brush his teeth, he will see that scar on his bald head right there. Apparently, it went down so deep that you could see the man's skull. So he pointed to the scar and said that he thinks about what Jon Moxley did to him every single day when Moxley put 23 stitches in his head. He called Moxley a sick, twisted, narcissistic sociopath. And here I thought that person was still booking creative in WWE. Omega said that Moxley might make them both bleed in the cage, but everything comes to an end in Detroit next week. Said Moxley made it personal, what he did to the Bucks and Takeshita and Callis. This is going to be a bloodbath. This match next week is going to be a bloodbath. I expect both men to bleed, but if nothing else, I think we all know who's going to bleed here in this match. We had the TNT champion Wardlow with Arn Anderson taking on Logan LaRue. At least he got a name this week. I don't even think they gave the guy last week a name. So this was another squash for the champion. Press slam, roundhouse lariat, powerbomb symphony made short work of Lash LaRue. Post-match, Wardlow got on the mic, and he called out Christian Cage and Luchasaurus for, what else? The TNT title open challenge. Now, usually somebody answers the open challenge of the champion. In this case, it was the champion calling out the challenger, which is a little backwards. So Christian Cage walked out. He had Luchasaurus with him. And he said that this is not going to happen here tonight in Baltimore in front of these morons. Then he let Wardlow know this shot is not for Luchasaurus. He says, this shot is for me. Christian is the one who plans to challenge for the TNT championship. And Wardlow and Arn Anderson sold this like they were shocked. They couldn't believe what they were hearing. You know what? I was thinking about this when the segment was over. It would be terrible for Wardlow to take the title off him after he just won it back for a third time. I'm not saying this is necessarily a good thing for old Wardlow here, but I like the idea of Christian winning the TNT championship. I could get behind a Christian Cage run, however long or short it may be, as the TNT champion in AEW. I am a Christian fan. I still enjoy his work and his promo work. He's older now, but Christian can still deliver the goods. We don't get to see enough of him in the ring, unfortunately, anymore. Not that he should be wrestling every single week on TV, but he was gone for 9 months with the injury, and he came back and he had the final burial match with Jungle Boy. He lost, and that's pretty much the only match he's had. That's the only action that he has seen since he's come back. But I would support a Christian run if they wanted to put the TNT title on him, because it's pretty clear to me at this point, Wardlow is not going to do anything for the TNT championship. I wouldn't have even bothered putting the belt back on him, because I'm not really sure what it's doing for him. Even though he's only had it back for a few weeks, I don't see this going much differently than the first and the second run did. And they certainly did no favors to the TNT championship with those first two runs. Christian, though, as great of a heel as he is, I think could be very entertaining as TNT champion. And, of course, he has a name and he's got some star power, and I think that that's something the title is sorely lacking right now. So, yes, I would get behind a Christian run as the TNT champion. But what I assume is that Christian is going to be the appetizer to the main course, that is the dinosaur. And whether it's a double or nothing or some other time, this is all just building to eventually Luchasaurus and Wardlow, right? The two big guys going toe-to-toe. We got a video from earlier today, which I mentioned at the beginning of the stream a little bit earlier. We got a video from the Briscoe Family Chicken Farm in Sandy Fork. We had Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh paying a visit to Mark Briscoe up in Delaware. They came knocking on Mark's door. He answered holding his infant son, who they said, oh, what a beautiful, I think they said, what a beautiful girl or whatever. He says, it's my son. Oh, okay. We didn't realize that. So his infant son, Sanjay and Satnam Singh, as you can see here in this image, were, this is so ridiculous. They were wearing matching overalls. And they came to give him some help on the farm as a show of good faith. You know, they've really been buddying up to Mark Briscoe in recent weeks. And here in this particular scene, Jeff Jarrett was about to sing With My Baby Tonight. He said, I want to sing my favorite With My Baby. And then he stopped himself. He's going to sing it on the guitar. But he stopped himself when they turned and saw Papa Briscoe show up, which led to Jarrett's crew excusing themselves. They left the porch. They went to go leave. And we had a little conversation between Mark Briscoe and Papa Briscoe. And Papa Briscoe said that, look, I know that you've known Jay Lethal for a long time, and he's all right, but you should beware of the guy in the overalls. And Mark said, which one? And Papa Briscoe said, both of them. And then after this, Jay Lethal, he looked into the camera. He announced that he and Jeff Jarrett were challenging FTR to a tag team championship match at Double or Nothing. And Lethal turned to Mark and he said, you know, I know that you and your brother beat FTR in the past, and you wanted to know, how'd you do it? And Mark said, is that what this is all about? And Jarrett suggested, he kind of cut him off and said, well, why don't we go fishing and we'll talk strategy. So that's how the segment ended. Basically, this is all about the fact that the Briscoes have beaten FTR in the past. They've figured out how to beat FTR, right, from all their battles in Ring of Honor. And now these guys want to know, how did you do it? Because they've already had a shot before at the tag team titles. Although I think that was against the Acclaimed, wouldn't it? The last time they had a tag team title match. But they were not successful in their first attempt at those titles. And this time they want to make sure that they master their strategy. So that's why they're being so nice to Mark Briscoe. They want to find out from him, what do we need to do to beat FTR? So now it makes sense why they're being so overly friendly to Mark Briscoe recently. But I think that we need more vignettes from the Chicken Farm. We need more vignettes of Jeff Jarrett from the Chicken Farm. I thought that this was very entertaining. And when the segment was over, and I saw Mark Briscoe was there, and I saw Papa Briscoe was there, my only thought when the segment was over was, man, I miss Jay Briscoe. And it's a damn shame he's not there anymore. Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process. Sometimes it can come out of something positive. Other times it can be born out of grief. And losing a loved one, I've had that experience too many times in my life, and I know some of you have as well. One thing I learned out of that is that I don't need to rely on others as much as maybe I did before. Therapy is all about deepening your self-awareness because sometimes we don't know what we want or why we are the way we are until we talk through things. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can help you along on that journey. Therapy can be helpful in learning not only about yourself, but about positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It isn't just for people who have experienced trauma or loss. If you've been thinking of starting therapy, a great way to start is to give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient and suitable to your schedule. It doesn't matter how busy you may be. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. We had Ricky Starks one-on-one with Juice Robinson. We had Jay White in his corner, both men representing Bullet Club Gold. You can buy it at a convenience store near you. The match spilled over to ringside. Starks whipped Robinson into the barricade. Juice started gouging at the eyes of Ricky. Set up for a pile driver, but Starks backdropped him on the floor. And Starks picked up Juice. He slowly marched up the ring steps, and he body slammed him onto the floor, heading into a picture-in-picture break. A little bit later on, Starks went up top for a top rope splash. Robinson, though, got his knees up. And Juice set up for a DDT. Starks, though, rolled him up for a two count. Robinson threw a double thrust to Starks' throat. Ricky, though, came back with a spear and then hit the Rochambeau for the 1-2-3. Ricky Starks picks up the win here over Juice Robinson. After the match was over, Jay White ran in and he attacked Ricky. Ricky fought back. He set up Jay over his shoulder for the Rochambeau. Juice Robinson came in. He pulled his partner to safety and they fled the ring. Jay White's arrival in AEW has been very underwhelming so far. And he hasn't been there for very long. It's been a month and a half maybe. Not a very big sample size so far to go by, but it's been very underwhelming so far. And now they're clearly building to Double or Nothing. It's going to be Jay White one-on-one. It's not official yet, but it will be. Jay White one-on-one with Ricky Starks. And I think those two are going to have a kick-ass match. It's going to be really good. It's a great spot for Ricky to be in as well, working against a former IWGP champion. I know he's not as big of a star in the AEW world as Chris Jericho was when Ricky feuded with him. But this will be good, I think, for both of them and to go out there and have a really good, you know, assuming they click together. We've never seen them in the ring one-on-one, but it's an opportunity for Ricky Starks to go out there on one of the few pay-per-views they have throughout the year, have a match on the show, but have a match on the show against somebody the caliber of opponent that Jay White is. I don't see this being anything but very good, and Starks needed this win. If he's going on to face Jay White, then he has to beat Juice Robinson, so him winning made sense, but I'm just saying so far, this has been a very underwhelming 6 weeks or however many weeks it has been. We don't get to see much of Jay White on television anyway, at least not on Dynamite, or hear from him very often. I'm hoping that coming out of Double or Nothing, though, once they get away from this, when this is over, I'm hoping that will change. He's too good not to be featured in a more prominent role on this show. And I would build him up a little bit more, let him get a few wins under his belt before we start talking about the international title or the TNT title. But could I see Jay White as TNT champion in the next 6 months? Or in the next 9 months? Yeah, absolutely. Or as the international champion? Sure, the international title is the workhorse title now. It has replaced the TNT title as the number two championship in this company. So yeah, you bet your ass I could see Jay White holding that title. And I would have him in contention for that title. In fact, we have Forbidden Door coming up in June. And I know they like doing AEW against New Japan, and we're going to have that on the show. But that doesn't mean that every single match has to be that. Jay White used to be with New Japan. He isn't anymore. Maybe that's the match to do on June 25th. Maybe at the Forbidden Door show in Toronto, the match to do is Jay White challenging Orange Cassidy, who's been on this incredible run since December as the international champion. Maybe he drops that title to Switchblade Jay White. Because that title is more important now. It is more valuable it is perceived that way than the TNT title. So we're not even thinking about the TNT title right now. Orange Cassidy and Jay White for the international title at Forbidden Door. That should be at the top of the list of matches under consideration for Orange Cassidy on that show. Now, before the main event, in the back, Darby Allin and Jungle Boy were shown pumping each other up in their dress, which sounds kind of lewd. They were motivating each other. They were not pumping each other in their dressing room, but they were motivating each other heading into the tag team main event. Darby then left the room, and he left the door open when he walked out. MJF just so happened to be walking down the hallway. He slipped on into the room, and he closed the door behind him. And Jungle Boy turns around. He sees MJF. He doesn't attack him. MJF says, oh, he's got something to tell him. He's got something to say. And he says, you know, I remember saying that you and me, we could be at the top of this sport. And I still believe that. And he pointed to what he's done for Sammy Guevara, all the money he's made him. And he's more over now than he was before he met me. And he said, I could do the same for you. MJF said that Jungle Boy is not championship material, and that's okay, because he was offering him a spot next to the throne. And Jungle Boy said, look, I'm not looking for a spot next to the throne, I'm looking for the crown. And Darby all of a sudden came back to the locker room. MJF told Darby, I'm leaving, you should probably talk to your tag team partner, though. And Jungle Boy told Darby, don't worry about it, we got this. A noticeably very distrustful Darby Allin told him, no, I got this. So sowing the seeds of dissension here between the two baby faces heading into this main event, which was Darby Allin and Jungle Boy against MJF and Sammy Guevara, who they got the theme mashup. We got the theme mashup treatment here for these two guys. Stipulation is very simple. If Darby and Jungle Boy win, they are added to the main event at Double or Nothing. It turns into a fatal four-way for the AEW World Championship, but the babyfaces have to win this match. This was all about whether both teams could coexist. MJF and Sammy, they hugged while they were wearing matching Burberry scarves. Jungle Boy went after MJF, but the referee stepped in, and MJF was taunting him. Meanwhile, Sammy is choking Darby with his scarf, and the referee doesn't see this. Jungle Boy called for a tag. Darby reached for the tag, but MJF pulled Jungle Boy down from the apron. Jungle Boy, though, ended up eventually hitting a Tiger Driver on Sammy for a near fall. He went up top. MJF grabbed his foot, and Sammy raced up top, hit a Spanish fly, top rope Spanish fly for a near fall. Darby and MJF tagged in, and Darby went for a code red. This is my favorite spot of the entire match. So we get Darby and MJF in here, and Darby goes for the code red, but MJF counters it into a sit-out powerbomb. So if you could picture this, as Darby is leaping on his back to do the, trying to get in position for the move, MJF just sort of flicked him back forward, and in doing so, he caught him on the way down and dropped down for a sit-out powerbomb. So it was a very... very cool move. Jungle Boy tagged in. He put MJF in the snare trap submission. Sammy double stomped Jungle Boy to break that up. MJF and Sammy, they ran the ropes. They were going to do stereo dives like best friends. Come off the ropes. Sammy does his dive. MJF stops short because he doesn't need to do dives. MJF is not stupid. He's not going to go out there and do anything that he physically does not need to do. He is going out there to do what he needs to do. Grounded? Maybe he'll come off the middle rope for something, but not very often do you see him doing stuff off the top rope or doing dives out of the ring. So he stopped short. Sammy tagged in, and he went up top. MJF then tagged himself in before Sammy performed a Swanton bomb. MJF covered Jungle Boy for a two count. Sammy was not very happy about this. He's not very happy about MJF trying to steal his glory away from him. MJF set up Jungle Boy for a powerbomb. Sammy tagged himself in while MJF was executing the move, and then he tried to steal the pin. So now the two heels are bickering. They're up in each other's faces. It's all falling apart. And they're bickering with each other. MJF slaps the taste out of his mouth. He goes to turn away. Sammy spins him around, catches his partner with a super kick. And Darby, Jungle Boy runs the ropes. And Darby tags himself in before Jungle Boy hits Sammy with his sliding elbow to the back of the head, which is one of the new moves he started using recently. Jungle Boy covers Sammy, thinking that he's got the match won and thinking that he is the legal man. Again, he didn't realize that Darby had blind tagged himself into the match. So while Jungle Boy has Sammy covered, up top goes Darby. And Darby comes off with a coffin drop. I mean, Jungle Boy barely rolled out of the way. I mean, Darby, no regard for his partner here. No regard for Jungle Boy as he came off the top rope. And Darby hits the coffin drop. Darby gets the pin. And Darby punches his ticket and Jungle Boy's ticket back into the main event at Double or Nothing. Even though Jungle Boy was eliminated from the Pillars tournament a few weeks ago, he managed to find his way back in and make the four-way official. But Darby almost crushed Jungle Boy with that coffin drop had he not moved out of the way at the very last second. And so the two of them exchanged words, got a little heated in the ring between them when the match was over. And as he was backing up the ramp with his belt to leave, MJF slowly turned around and he looked up at the Tron and he noticed the graphic was already up on screen, showing that at Double or Nothing, it will be a four-way for the world championship with all four men. And MJF was not very happy about that at all. It may have been predictable, but, you know, the MJF-Sammy stuff also may have been very hokey. All that being said, this was the correct outcome to this match. The four-way was the strongest of all the match possibilities that they could have gone with for that main event at Double or Nothing, so I'm very happy that we are, in fact, getting the four-way match. And what they've done here with this story that they've been doing over the last few weeks is they've now created friction between all the people in this match. Now, I know they were cutting promos on each other a few weeks ago. There was already a level of friction there. But now they have ratcheted up the friction between the heels, between the babyfaces and the heels. And they still have 3 weeks of television left before we even get to Double or Nothing. What this accomplished was this killed some time. You know, the silly little story with MJF trying to buy loyalty out of Sammy and get him to lay down for him, and everything that built to this was just a way to, you know, kill time and build more friction between the four people who were going to be in the main event. And MJF's master plan blew up in his face. That is how the show ended. So they moved the stories along, the key stories that they had to, and they tried to get you as excited as possible for Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley in a cage next week. But on the whole, this was a very kind of ho-hum episode of Dynamite. It was kind of in the middle. You know, if I had to rate it on, and I don't usually do the numerical rating, but if I had to rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, I would probably go 6. You know, about a 6, 6.5 maybe for the show, I think would be fair. Nothing terrible, but also nothing terribly exciting. But then again, given some of the shows that we have gotten, I look at the show we got on Monday night, the friggin' draft, and some of the matches we got, and I will happily take a show like this that we got tonight from Dynamite. Sometimes it takes seeing shows like that to even more appreciate what we get on these Wednesday shows, even in a week where it's not overly exciting. At least we still got some pretty good wrestling on the show tonight. Now, Rampage on Friday, surprise, surprise, is once again bumped, I think for like the fifth week in a row, out of its usual time slot. So it will be airing on Friday night at 6:30 Eastern. You can have dinner and watch Rampage. The lineup is the Firm Deletion match, which I will have to check this out, because I was a big fan of the Final Deletion and all the stuff from the Hardy Compound, from Impact, and even what WWE did. So I will check this out. Maybe not on Friday, but I will check this out. It will be Matt and Jeff Hardy, Isaiah Cassidy, and Hook taking on Ethan Page, Big Bill, Lee Moriarty, and Stokely Hathaway. Mark Briscoe has a match against Preston Vance. Jade Cargill will be in action, and the Lucha Bros and Vikingo take on Powerhouse Hobbs, QT Marshall, and Aaron Solo. Dynamite next Wednesday. Orange Cassidy defends the International Championship against Daniel Garcia, and inside a steel cage, it will be Kenny Omega one-on-one with Jon Moxley. And that really is the feature bout next week on the show. They are building to something. They are building to a tag match, Double or Nothing, involving the Elite and the Blackpool Combat Club. But what we are getting next week is it's a pay-per-view main event, you know, between two of the biggest stars in the company next week. So let's take a look at the Twitter poll, which should be working now. Again, my Twitter, by the way, just to give you an update on that whole situation, I know a lot of people have been having issues. Twitter still does not work for me on the web, like in a web browser. It works on my phone. I cannot get it to work in Chrome or Firefox or Edge or any of these web browsers or private mode. Like, none of it works. So I think it's just broken. That's it. It no longer works in my internet browser, unfortunately. However, I think I got the poll to show properly here. Let's hope so here. And indeed we did. For now, it's showing. What did you think of AEW Dynamite for May 3rd? I got rid of the thumbs in the middle option because for far too long I have given you people a cop-out response. No more cop-outs. Very simple. Thumbs up, thumbs down. You either liked it or you didn't. 67% of you liked the show and gave the show a thumbs up. 33% have given this show a thumbs down. So, at Solomonster on Twitter is where you can vote in these esteemed polls every week. But it is leading in the thumbs up category right now. 67% thumbs up for Dynamite. There you go. Let's take a look at your super chats. You guys dropped a whole bunch of them on me earlier. And let's begin here with Jockey Fowler. Says, I know this is an AEW stream, but what do you think of Edge possibly feuding with Bray Wyatt? Because Bray has been a bust so far, and Edge can make any program work. It sounds like a bit of a bore to me, to be honest with you. I don't know. I don't know about that one. That one doesn't scream excitement. I'm not sold on that. Edge is on SmackDown now. And there are enough, you know, people on SmackDown, whether it's a Bobby Lashley or, I mean, take your pick, right? They just had a fucking superstar shakeup. There's other people that Edge can work with in the meantime. We don't know where Logan Paul's going to fall. You know, Logan Paul went undrafted. Maybe we get something with Edge and Logan Paul at some point. Naughty Delicious Chicken with Flavor. Happy Bullet Club Day. 10th year anniversary. Bullet Club for life. Just too sweet. Did they mention that on the show tonight? I don't remember them mentioning the anniversary. He also says, Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes go to the main roster together whenever they get call up. Trick Williams' promo game is fire, and Melo is him. Shin Superkick Akuma, thank you for the $5 super chat. He says, you want to talk about terrible shirts. When they first paired Eddie and China, the shirt said, but China. Enter if you dare. It only lasted a week. Yeah, I've seen far worse than that. As bad as that is, there's been, you know. The APA had a t-shirt that said, always pounding ass on it, okay? I mean, it doesn't get much worse than that. Who would walk around wearing that shirt? Who would walk around with a shirt that says, always pounding ass? I mean, I guess there are some. I guess there's an audience for everything, but why you would wear that in public, I don't quite understand. Maybe if you were going to a swingers club, maybe. I don't know. Naughty Delicious says AEW and Tony Khan should create a concept team when it comes to doing storylines, presentations, and create new match stipulations. Think outside the box. I don't think you need a team for that. I think you can take suggestions from anybody and everybody who is involved in the creative aspect of AEW. I don't think you need a dedicated team just to come up with stipulations. I think what you might want to have, as big as the roster is have people who are dedicated to focusing on specific divisions. So you might want to have somebody who is dedicated to the women and coming up with interesting storylines for the women that don't necessarily revolve around the championship. You might want to have one that's dedicated to the TNT title. Right? I mean, you can have kind of little breakout teams in that respect. I think that would make sense. But I would say something like that, where you're trying to think of ideas outside the box. I don't think you need a kind of... The entire creative team should be giving input on ideas like that. That's why it's called creative. I don't think you need a team dedicated to that one specific element. And says, I hope Will Washington becomes the head booker soon. Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I am predicting AEW's Wembley Stadium show will have over 70,000 people attending the event. I think that that is very possible. I think you may well end up being correct. French Fry Slut with the $4 super chat. I never liked Sammy and MJF's combo. Glad it is over. Or duo. Combo, duo. It was always going to be temporary. It was never meant to be a long-term thing. Nick Grasso with the 1999. Not a great show tonight. The thing I liked on the show was the Hikaru Shida swerve. I was thinking, this doesn't make sense that she's a homegrown girl joining with the Outcast. And then Britt and Jamie came from behind, and I knew that it was a swerve. J-Ray with the $5. Congrats to Tony Khan and AEW. Live Nation has reported that the official numbers are 45,000 sold so far for All In at Wembley Stadium. Please beware of the WWE droids. And I'm telling you, man, they are in absolute shambles based on what I am seeing on social media. I don't know why they care. It just puzzles me why people are that dedicated to, you know, spending their entire day doing nothing but posting, you know, shit posting and troll comments. And you know that 85% of them don't actually care about any of this. And half of them probably have already bought their ticket to the show. But they just go online and they shit post because they have nothing better to do. Hulkling 93, right now reheating Wardlow is like reheating day-old French fries in a microwave. It's just not the same. That's why you got to buy an air fryer. Kalios with the $6. Netherlands here, and I got my first tier ticket to All In, my first ever wrestling stadium event. Got a full frontal view of the ring and stage. Very happy. Well, congratulations, Kalios. I am very happy. Most people who get a full frontal are very happy. I guess it depends on who and what you're getting a full frontal of, but I am very happy for you. As your first show, too, boy, you're setting the bar awfully high here. But have fun, man. Jay Glow, Night of Champions is in 24 days, and Roman Reigns does not have an opponent yet. If Cody beats Brock this Saturday, could we get Cody and Roman too, or is it too soon? It's too soon. You don't do Cody and Roman in Saudi Arabia on 3 weeks' notice. You save it for SummerSlam, you have Cody win Money in the Bank, and he goes to SummerSlam, and you do the match there at Ford Field on your second or third, I guess depending on your perspective, biggest show of the year. Some people would say Royal Rumble is the second biggest. Some people say SummerSlam is the second biggest. I always look at it as WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, then SummerSlam, and then everything else. I guess now I would say Survivor Series if they're doing War Games. Me, you might say Money in the Bank has long since replaced Survivor Series as that number four. Luther Angel with the $2. Do you think Adam Cole will be AEW champion someday? Someday is a long time, man. Someday is a long time. Do I think he'll be the AEW champion someday? Yes, I do. Jacob Donnelly with the $25 Brie mode. We know what his favorite cheese is. His favorite cheese is Brie. I've noticed the Pillars feud has put a lot of focus on Darby specifically, with Sting also noticeably absent from this feud. I do hope there are plans for a Darby and MJF singles feud in the future. That's exactly what I've been saying. You got to save that for later in the year. And I've talked about the different ways you can tie Sting into it. It's all right there for him. MJF and the labors that he has people going through, there's a way to weave Sting in there in his retirement match. There's a definite story there. They want to take it. Drew Johnson with the $50 super chat drop. You get the yes chance of the night. Crowd goes wild all the time for Drew Johnson, who says, HBK is the GOAT. Solomonster, you are the man. You know, HBK is the one who fired me on episode 4 of Sound Off Gamer. Not very fond of him right now. MH Nova, Peace Solo, and the GWO. Thoughts on AEW doing two similar originals against Outcast stories simultaneously? And what direction do you think they end up going with them? Well, what is the other... So I guess you're talking about the Blackpool Combat Club and the Elite. Yeah, I mean, I guess it is. But I haven't really looked at it that way. I haven't really looked at it so much as the originals against the kind of... I don't want to say WWE invaders. Plus, you have Wheeler Yuta, part of the group, and he's hardly an invader. But if I assume that you are referring to the Elite and the Blackpool Combat Club, I don't really look at it that way. You know, the Outcasts and what they're doing with the women, yes, I do see that. But I assume this is all building to Blood and Guts. You know, possibly one for the women and one for the men. Silver Tower. Old MacDonald had a slap nuts. EI, don't piss me off. Gotta put that to a beat. Silver Tower, thank you. Silver Tower again with another $5. Says, with how many tickets they've sold so far, I am excited for the Wembley show. Yeah, I mean, visually, it's gonna be something to see them pack a stadium that big. And this is a company that's 4 years old. 4 years old. You know, WWE has a huge head start on them. They've been established for decades. I don't know what their first big stadium show would have been. I guess it would have been Shea Stadium, maybe. Late 70s, right? 1980-ish. And AEW is potentially going to put upwards of 70,000 people in Wembley Stadium in year number 4. It's pretty impressive. No other wrestling company has done that quickly. Tuxedo T-Servo, never underestimate how crazy the Brits are for wrestling. That Wembley show atmosphere is going to be nuts. Say, Tuxedo, thank you for the $30 Bully the Clown. And look, if it was 10,000 people, their first show in the UK, that atmosphere was always going to be nuts. Now imagine doing 60 or 70,000 people in Wembley Stadium for your first UK show. It's going to be something. J-Ray with the $5. The narrative that only WWE is allowed to sell that many tickets has already been crushed. No Punk yet. Not one match announced and almost at 50,000. Jeremy Watley. I am a big fan of Cruz, Zoe, and JD McDonagh, but I am worried about their main roster future, especially Cruz in particular. What are your thoughts? Well, Apollo Cruz has had runs already on the main roster as a heel and a babyface. He was Intercontinental Champion. I don't see him going higher than that. I feel like he's already hit his ceiling on the main roster. You know, maybe he could be a U.S. Champion. Although, where did he get drafted? He got drafted to Raw, didn't he? Yeah, Raw has the Intercontinental. Maybe he could feud for the Intercontinental. He's already had that before. He's very talented. And you can match him up with almost anybody. I'm just looking at his ceiling. How high can he go? I don't see him going much higher than he was at when he had the IC title. When he was with Commander Aziz. Zoe will do well. I don't look at Zoe as somebody they're ever going to build the women's division around. I made the comparison on the podcast last week. I said she kind of reminds me of Victoria in a way. Victoria was never somebody who was like the top woman or even one of the top two women in the division. She held the championship a few times. She was known to be a good worker, and she was somebody who could give some of the ladies on that roster their, you know, their best match. That's how I view Zoe Stark. She's very impressive in NXT from all that I've seen from her, but I don't ever see her being the focal point. She might win the title once or twice. She'll be the one that, you know, you put her in the ring with anybody else in that division, and she could probably give them a pretty good match. That's how I see Zoe Stark. JD McDonagh, you know, somebody brought this up the other day, and I could definitely see this, him being on Raw, him being a protege of Finn Balor, joining the Judgment Day, could very well be where he ends up. I think it would actually help him more than anything else to link up with a group. Him on his own on the main roster, I don't see that working out too well for him. So him being part of the Judgment Day may be the best thing that could happen for him. Silver Tower with the $5 super chat. You know, with the audio problems they keep having, they should have a reality show where they're in the production truck. Yeah, we'll call it AEW, what is this called? All Access? You'll have to come up with a name for it. And it'll just be nothing but being in the truck whenever there's somebody going overtime in their promo or something doesn't work. You see everybody freaking out and cussing. And I think that could be, actually, I would probably watch a show like that. We're only 15 likes away from Be the Booker. We're very close. So hit that thumbs up if you guys want to book some matches here. EJ Slemp with the $4.99. I don't think I've ever heard you talk about Bill Shaw before. Do you have any opinion on him? All I know is that he hired Eric Bischoff and then he left. I know who he is. I have no opinion on Bill Shaw. The Coug in the chat, the number is 45,000 so far. Very possible they will hit 50,000 in pre-sale tickets tomorrow. Rocky Road, go Tigers. Great to see JV and Max back in Detroit. Naughty Delicious Chicken with Flavor. I do a Jay White against David Finlay at Forbidden Door. If Jay White wins, he gets reinstated back to New Japan. Well, that would be a backwards move now, wouldn't it? Given the fact that he left New Japan, he signed with AEW. Now you're going to have him in a match where he's trying to win his way back into New Japan? That doesn't make any sense. That should not be the priority. The priority for him should be wrestling for championships and trying to become a champion in AEW. That's why I suggested you do him and Orange Cassidy for the international title. Red Emissary of Darkness, can you do the sussy twerk? No, I cannot. Naughty Delicious. Jade Cargill should take the AEW Women's World title from Jamie Hayter and vacate the TBS title. The TBS title needs a new champion. It will have a new champion. Her name is Chris Statlander. You just need to be patient. Lovelie, how is your night solo? My night is going very well. I get to hang with all of you as I do each and every Wednesday. It's a very busy day today. I'm very tired. But this is something that I can always look forward to here. Powerblind, thank you for the $5. And NoCap with the $4.99 says, it's a neutral CM Punk observer. Was he like an animal in a cage at a zoo? As a neutral CM Punk observer, is he really worth the trouble being brought back? The Elite have not forgiven him. Seems like a bad idea. Well, that's going to be up to Tony Khan. If Tony Khan can figure out a way to get them all in a room together and come to some sort of understanding where there won't be any more issues and there won't be any more drama, then they'll be able to make a lot of money with CM Punk. I've already told you everything that I need to say about CM Punk. You know my view on CM Punk. You know what I would have done if it were up to me months ago. He would no longer be there. But he is there, and he wants to come back. He wants to make this work. The Elite maybe don't feel quite the same way, but it's up to Tony Khan, and if Tony Khan is going to bring him back, then it's up to the Young Bucks to put their personal feelings aside as EVPs. Right? You wanted to be EVPs. Well, you're EVPs. And so you need to put your personal feelings aside for a few minutes and sit down in a room and meet with the man and see if something can be worked out, even if you don't want to work with him. There has to be a meeting of the minds. That's one of the responsibilities when you are an executive, when you are the leader, when you are a president or a vice president in a company, you have certain responsibilities. You have to be the bigger person. You have to do what's best for the company. The Young Bucks don't want to come to the table. Well, they have to suck it up and come to the table. That's my viewpoint on that. But beyond that, I don't really have anything else to say about CM. Thank you for all of the questions. It's a good good variety there in the questions tonight. Some WWE, some AEW. We are at 465 likes. 450 was the goal. So thank you very much for helping us smash our goal tonight. And let's get to be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is speaking now of the time Elite. To be the booker.
There they are on screen. It is time for Be the Book, everyone's favorite segment, where we try to book some matches. You know, I may just do what Tony Khan can't do. I might end up booking Kenny Omega and CM Punk, right? You never know what this thing is going to land on. Adam, yes, I have seen Will Sasso doing the Jesse Ventura impression. He is fantastic. If you close your eyes, you would swear it was Jesse. You know who else has a great Jesse Ventura impression? Karrion Kross. And if you've never seen it before, just go to YouTube when we're done here. Type in Karrion Kross, Jesse Ventura. You'll get the clip from the... they were in a gym working out, but he did an interview with Chris Van Vliet. And Chris is working out, and Kross is just sitting there, man. He's talking about the Gulf of Tonkin. He's trying to hype him up. Close your eyes. You would swear it was Jesse Ventura. Maybe that's the gimmick. Maybe he needs that as his new gimmick in WWE. He can pretend to be Jesse Ventura. We begin here with the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. This was a very pilled up Shawn Michaels trying to gut his way through the main event of WrestleMania 14, which was no good. Even Steve Austin says, in his own words, and he was in the ring that night, he thought that match was the shits. I've seen these two have much better matches, but that's what happens when you go into a match with a couple of herniated discs in your back. It's a little bit hard to have a great wrestling match. Drew Johnson's going to be very excited that we landed on Shawn Michaels, since that is his favorite wrestler. Shawn Michaels is going to go one-on-one with Andrade El Idolo. A great wrestling match that would be. Maybe not the marquee name of some of the other people in Be the Booker, but Prime Andrade against Prime Shawn Michaels in the ring would be a fantastic match. That would be tremendous. Again, not a match I've ever really even given any consideration to, but that would be a very good match. Todd, yeah, I think it was. I think that was Jim Johnston next to HBK. I think Jim Johnston was doing... guitar, I guess, or whatever he would have been doing during the live performance there at WrestleMania. On the ladies' side, we begin with Tori, Kane's former love interest, old Tombstone Tori, former member of D-Generation X. Tori going to go one-on-one with Ivory. Tori and Ivory. Not sold on that. Let's go to the tiebreaker. It is time for tag team Be the Booker. We begin with Head Cheese, Al Snow, and Steve Blackman. This is like the Attitude Era in a nutshell right here. Although I guess this right here, this probably was from the year 2000, I'm guessing. We have the mannequin head in the background, and we have Steve Blackman, legitimately one of the toughest men on the roster, wearing a block of cheese, a cheese hat, on his head. I enjoyed Head Cheese, and I can't even have cheese anymore. I enjoyed Head Cheese. Look at that death stare, by the way, on Blackman's face. He is ready to murder someone. Head Cheese against Tyson Kidd and Cesaro. I mean, you had me from Head Cheese. Then you take these two guys, you put them in the ring, and I think they're incapable of having a bad match. This Friday night, SmackDown is in San Juan, and Bad Bunny will be on the show, and I will be here to review it with you on Friday night for the SmackDown stream, and then 24 hours later is Backlash. I will be live here on YouTube covering Backlash post-show, so come on back here to YouTube on Saturday night. Podcast, of course, as always, drops on Sunday. That'll be episode 807. Thank you for hanging out with me tonight. I appreciate it. All the love and support. And if you're a channel member, go check out the new Sound Off Gamer. It's over 90 minutes long. Everybody else gets it on Friday, so you won't have to wait very long. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic rest of your evening, and I will see you back here for more live Sound Off on YouTube. Hit that thumbs up on the way out. I'll see you Friday night.